Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRue Show. It's Saturday, July 22, 2007. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. I'm with the economic section of the Executive Intelligence Review News Service. And we're very happy today to have special guests for the show topic, Building Bridges. I'm speaking politically, strategically, geographically to the Eurasian land bridge and the post-Cheney era, The View from Denmark. And we have a transatlantic panel, and I'm very happy to welcome here, live in our studio today, Paul and Michelle Rasmussen. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
And they are here. They've been giving briefings. They're going to have meetings on Capitol Hill, and you'll hear more from them directly. But from the LaRouche Youth Movement, let me welcome here in the studio live, Lewis Wilden. Welcome.
Thank you.
Who's in the war room and has been in many places, but he will be giving an overview and some of the latest update on initiatives about impeaching Cheney during this hour. And we especially welcome from Germany in Berlin, Elias Dotemar. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Good connection. And who's from many places in Sweden as his one of his homelands. And what we're going to do now then is jump right into it with how it happens the Denmark, which is home to 5 million people or so, has become one of the is a fulcrum for politically the kind of morale and the kind of initiative that we need for reconstructing the world. So, Michelle, why don't you just start off?
Thank you very much, Marcia.
Oh, let me first welcome all the Danes that may be listening by email, by website, and welcome them if they wish to put in questions or comments. If they're on the website, which is www.larouchepub.com for those listening later in the week, we'll be glad to take them live. Okay, Michelle.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, I can start 1 year ago. In July 2006, the Schiller Institute in Denmark, which is the LaRouche Association located in Denmark, made a decision, despite that we only had a local of 3 full-time organizers, plus people that help out part-time, and we have 9 LaRouche Youth Movement members, full-time activists, but located in Germany and in Paris, and now we even have 1 in South Africa. But anyway, Tom Gillesberg, who is the chairman of the Schiller Institute in Denmark, made the decision that we would go to a mass distribution mode and produce the first of our campaign newspapers in a run of 50,000 copies. It's called New Deal, and it has an article translated by LaRouche and an article by Paul Rasmussen about how to build the Danish section of the Eurasian land bridge, because what we wanted to do with the master distribution newspapers would be to reach out to 1% of the Danish population in hand with newspapers and to introduce LaRouche in a strategy to try to create another Italian situation, where LaRouche has been in Italy many times addressing the parliament there. We wanted to use the newspapers to bring LaRouche in and also bring in our analysis of the growing international financial crisis and the idea of building a Eurasian land bridge. So we worked out a program of not only completing the 3 legs of the major infrastructure plan that had been on the drawing boards, actually, as Paul will tell later, since the 1930s. But we revived a plan that the forerunners of the Schiller Institute in the LaRouche movement had since early 1980 of building a direct connection between the island on which Copenhagen is located, which is called Zealand, and the main Danish mainland the Jutland Peninsula across the Kattegat Sea. And this has been now termed the Kattegat Link. And the idea was to not only build this as a bridge connection and to complete the bridge connections, but also to have a magnetic levitation system, to have maglev, and to have Denmark be the first country in Europe to commercially implement the maglev technology, which is German technology, but right now it's only functioning commercially in Shanghai, from Shanghai to the airport. A trip of how many kilometers, Paul?
I believe it was 7.3 kilometers.
Yeah, which they, it's seven minutes.
No. Yeah, it's 7 minutes. Now yeah. I'm mixing things up.
Yeah. In any case.
18 kilometers or so, I don't know.
Yeah, any case, it's a trip that goes at the highest speed of 431 kilometers an hour in the space of 7 minutes. What this would mean if we were to build this new Kattegat link between linking Copenhagen, which is the capital city of Denmark, which is located on the far western side of Denmark.
Eastern
side, excepting Bornholm, which is out in the Baltic Sea. But connecting Copenhagen directly with the second largest Danish city, which is Aarhus, located in the middle of the Jutland Peninsula, a trip which now takes about 4 hours or so, which with maglev connection would be a travel time of 25 minutes. And the idea of connecting Denmark's two largest cities in the space of 25 minutes would totally revolutionize the economy, the social life, the intellectual life, the cultural life of Denmark in an even greater way that it has done after the completion of the Great Belt Bridge, which is now 10 years old, and the bridge between Copenhagen and Malmö, Sweden, which was completed in the year 2000. So, in any case, we got out the first of our mass distribution newspapers by getting our network people, the people who subscribe and support our movement in Denmark, to not only finance the production of the newspaper, but to help distribute this. And then we also had special teams going out from our office to especially distribute the campaign newspapers at the dormitories to reach out to young people. So that was in July a year ago. And then in December, we produced the second newspaper with the Danish transcript of a webcast by LaRouche, and also the headline, Denmark's Future Role in the World, From Crusaders to Bridge Builders, with a leading article by Tom Gillesberg highlighting the necessity of building the femur bridge connection between the islands where Copenhagen is located and a southern island directly to Germany across the Baltic Sea, what is called the femur belt. At that time, there had been negotiations between Denmark and Germany. The Germans, however, were hesitating on agreeing because of hesitating as to the financing model. The way that Denmark had financed the Great Belt Bridge and the bridge to Sweden was by creating a state-owned company which would issue bonds, which would borrow money at low interest rates because there was a state guarantee. And the German government was not ready to approve that type of model. So we wanted to push for the necessity of building this bridge to Germany. That was in December, the second run. Then what happened was on February 19th, there was a Danish traffic economist whose name was is Uffe Jacobsen, who issued a statement to Denmark's largest newspaper, Jyllandsposten, with headquarters in Aarhus, in the second largest Danish city on the Jutland Peninsula. "Don't build the bridge to Germany," he said. "Let's build this connection between Copenhagen and Aarhus." So we called the newspaper and said, "Wait a minute. We think that we should build both bridges, but this bridge idea between the island Zealand and the Jutland mainland, we had this in our newspaper, our campaign newspaper, already back in July of last year, even complete with a timetable of how long it would take on the express track and the local track of a maglev connection. Why don't you write about our proposal?" So they called back and they did an interview with Tom asking what is the Schiller Institute, and then they actually went with it. And they wrote an article with the headline, Aarhus, Copenhagen, 25 minutter, Aarhus, Copenhagen, 25 minutes, complete with our timetable. And since that time, there have been three waves of major press coverage. That article kicked off press coverage in other media in Denmark. Then we took this proposal directly to the Danish parliament, where we had a slot of 15 minutes to testify in front of the Danish parliament's traffic committee in April of 2007. There's a PowerPoint presentation available on our homepage, which we will also make available to your listeners here. And we presented this idea. We received a very open response, questions specifically addressed to our proposals, and we pushed this forward. We did not get press coverage as a result of the testimony in the parliament, but when the Danish transportation minister responded negatively to our proposal, which was put to him by the Danish parliament's traffic committee for evaluation, the major news service of Denmark called Ritzau, like the UPI AP of Denmark, put out a newswire reporting on the minister's rejection of the Schiller Institute proposal. And this went around the major press. Then the third wave occurred just recently after two events. One was that the leadership of the Danish State Railroad came out around the period of the 10-year anniversary of the completion of the Great Belt Bridge and said, "Denmark needs high-speed trains, and Denmark needs this Kattegat connection." At the same time, Jyllandsposten had an editorial also calling for high-speed trains. We wrote an op-ed presenting our idea that, yes, this was all fine and good, that we should have this high-speed connection, but it should be maglev. And we used the slogan, "Shall Denmark be the last with the old or the first with the new?"
Oh, good.
And we said, Denmark has the chance because of the optimistic experience, which Paul can explain later, about the transformation that occurred in the country after the completion of the Great Belt Bridge, that we should take that experience and say, let's go maglev. Let's be the first country in Europe to implement maglev technology. And in fact, when Tom explained our program in the parliament, he said, look, we have the connection Shanghai to Shanghai Airport. If we build the connection Copenhagen-Aarhus, all we have to do then to get the Eurasian land bridge, which was Lenin LaRouche and Helga Zepp LaRouche's proposal, all we have to do is then connect the two. So in any case, then what happened is that Jyllands-Posten decided to have a front page article about the maglev, comparing the times that it would take to get from Copenhagen to Aarhus on the maglev, on a normal high-speed train, and on the current fastest trains. The day after, the same newspaper, Jyllands-Posten, printed Tom Gillisberg's op-ed prominently right next to their editorials. And so this was out to the whole country. And now I can just wrap up by saying that in the past couple of weeks, there has been such an a stampede for building this connection that now the only debate that is being had is, should the connection be a railroad only or also include the road traffic? And I would just like to say that LaRouche the other day, in his comments, he said, when referring to the necessity of impeaching Cheney, he said, we have to create a political climate where politicians will do things that they never thought possible. And with the mass circulation of the three newspapers, I forgot to mention the third newspaper, which we put out about 2 months ago, also in 50,000 copies. With the mass circulation of the newspapers, with having our supporters going out in the local areas around the country and discussing these ideas with people, with having this out on the internet, with the major press coverage, and with our staff members always looking for opportunities, how we can get these great ideas into the political institutions in Denmark and to shift the situation in a small country to take a leadership role, also to get Germany going. The only other thing I should add is that also in the last couple of months, we went into the final negotiations for making the femur belt connection to Germany, which was actually agreed to. And in the couple of weeks leading up to that, the Schiller Institute in Copenhagen, also then added by the Schiller Institute and LIM members in Berlin and Stockholm, had demonstrations calling for the Germans to agree to build the bridge. And the slogan was, a great country should not think small. As it is, the agreement was that Germany only agreed to pay for the road works and railroad connections up until the bridge, and that the bridge then will be financed 100% by the Danish government through the same Danish financing model. So in any case, we created a situation with only a few full-time staff members, but with a determination to get out LaRouche's ideas in Denmark and to hook this up with the greater idea of building Eurasian land bridge, which now will be connected not only to Shanghai, but also all the way over across the Bering Strait to North and South America. And we will have the people who have made the most important contributions in this campaign for the major infrastructure projects. We will be trying to get them to attend the Bering Strait conference held by the European Schiller Institute in the middle of September.
Thank you very much. We can say more about certain of these specifics, and she's mentioning it's September 15th and 16th in the Frankfurt area of Germany is a conference on the Bering Strait and reconstructing the world. But I want to especially I'll mention one thing. This excitement that you can build bridges and is something that's good you're going to be taking to Capitol Hill. And Hal Cooper, whom many of you know, you've heard on this show, who's a transportation expert and very much involved in pushing for the Bering Strait, he spent a day this past week with the LaRouche Youth Movement on Capitol Hill. Because otherwise, here we're, this show is being broadcast from the shadow of Washington, D.C., which LaRouche has recently called the cowardice zone when it comes to impeaching Cheney or building bridges. And Paul, you've been speaking about, though, how to have a cultural uplift and get rid of cowardice and small-mindedness.
Well, unfortunately, most people tend to be empiricists. When we do political organizing, this is one of the major obstacles. That is to have people create for themselves a vision of a future which is different from the time they are actually living in. So, and especially when we're speaking about greater changes, most people have difficulty imagining what that actually means. So it also was in Denmark in terms of the great infrastructure projects. They were actually born all the way back to 1933, and then all kinds of political struggles led to the point when finally it was built then. After, I will just add that in parenthesis, the last final push was the fall of the Berlin Wall and reunification of Germany. When a political majority of Denmark decided the time has come to realize these ideas of great infrastructure plans in Denmark, because otherwise we will lose our connections to Germany and we will not be included in that economic upswing that would come after that. So, riding on this wave of optimism from the fall of the Berlin Wall, the bridge was then actually built, the three projects were initiated, giving us first the Great Belt Bridge connecting East and West Denmark that was completed in 1998, and then the second bridge, which is connecting Copenhagen with the city of Malmö in southern Sweden, that was completed in the year 2000. Now, in the years up to the Great Belt Bridge being finished, we had all this greenies saying, oh, this is destroying environment, and they proved it, that all the herrings of the Baltic Sea would die out, and you name it, it was incredible.
The mermaids, okay.
Yeah, whatever. They're stone dead already. They're sitting there on the stones. Anyway, so, and people were rather negative also. We're watching the bridge saying, no, we can still use the ferries. The day the bridge opened, it changed the country. People realized, as I've said many times, people thought that a bridge was just a fast ferry. It's not. It's a geometry shift. It's like going from a polygon to a circle. And because instead of, and this is now just the recent statistics, in 1997, the last year before the bridge was completed, you had 8,300 cars going east-west in Denmark every day. Today is 27,500 cars every day. You have to realize, at the time of the ferries, that would be physically impossible. You could not have that many ferries transporting that many, and then you can add, at the same time, 21,000 people go east-west on the train. So you have 27,500 cars crossing the bridge, and going alongside them, 21,000 people on the trains. Every day, remember, or at least those who are older, remember in the good, bad old days, when you, Christmas time, for some reason, everybody who lives in Copenhagen had their relatives living in Jutland and vice versa. So, half a year before, you have to order your ticket, otherwise you wouldn't get any. And then, most of the radio time will be taken up by reports on the queues at the ferries. The waiting line is now up to 6 hours. If you don't have a ticket for today, don't even try to get on the ferry. And this was go on and on. And people thought that was normal. 1998, bridge opened, and suddenly it all changes. At Christmas time today, 40,000 cars will pass the Brits in one day. That would take 5 days with the ferry system to get them across. That's so people instantaneously got an idea what great infrastructure can do. We have an anecdote I'll just tell. One of the leading campaigners against the Brits was a well-known left-wing environmentalist by the name of Ebbe Reich. So a few weeks after the bridge opened, Danish TV took him up on the pylons of the bridge. The Great Belt Bridge is the second largest suspension bridge on the planet. And the top of the pylons are the highest points of the country. And they are now man-made. So they took him up on this and they asked him, so are you still against this bridge? And he was choking and said, no. This is so beautiful. And it was a good representation of what happened in the country, psychologically. People now look at these things as, well why not build more of it? But then there's also the other side of it, which is that LaRouche very often have difficulty in getting people to understand that economy is a physical process. It's not money. It's a physical process. So what does a bridge like this do? Well, it increases the fiscal economic density of the country manifold. And lo and behold, what is it that is the talk of Europe today? Oh, the magic Danish economy. We have 3% unemployment. We have great surpluses on the public budgets. We have gotten rid of our foreign debts. And what is the magic? And most people are talking about something they call, what is it actually call it?
Flexibility.
Flexicurity is a funny name for, in Denmark there has been a labor market system in function for 100 years whereby employers and employees themselves negotiate the rules on the workplaces, on a national basis, and the government stay out. But if you get unemployed, there will be a part union-paid, part government-paid, high level of unemployment. So there's a high level of security. So this is praised as a way to get high flexibility on the labor market. This is a buzzword of economists nowadays. Now, it is true that there is nowhere in Europe where as many people change jobs every year as in Denmark. And we're not just talking about being laid off, but even people in jobs seek new jobs. 7% of the workforce every year change jobs. But that is not the key to the Danish economy, because that was also the case when we were in deep recession in the 1970s, when Denmark was running the highest deficit on a balance sheet of payments for the outside world, when Denmark had the highest foreign indebtedness, if you did not count the Latin American countries. At that time, you also had flexicurity, but you had high unemployment and a low economy. So that's not the clue. What is the clue? How did Denmark go from 25 years of permanent negative economy to now the strongest economy of Europe? Some of our young members in Berlin actually reported that they went to a meeting at the Danish embassy, and even the officials from Denmark who were speaking there from the trade unions said it openly, well, we have infrastructure, we have built infrastructure. There's a fiscal change in the country. And one of them said, which is the true thing, nobody actually really measured the effect of increasing manifold the physical economic density of the country, which was the effect of the bridges, because that is where it comes from. There was a just a month ago one of the major business papers on the net had a front page article. This was on the 10 years anniversary of the opening of the bridge, of the rail bridge in 1997. They had It's a beautiful bridge, by the way. It itself is a piece of art. So they had a gorgeous picture of it. And then it said in the headline, the greatest success in the history of the country. And they, in a very short article, said, nobody would argue against that. That bridge is, without any comparison, such a success. So that's the background. When we propose the idea of building a 42 kilometers long bridge going from the island of Zealand to the small island of Samsø and then directly to the mainland, 42 kilometers altogether. We are getting close to the channel bridge, channel tunnel in length, actually. But what it would do, it would change the road links between Copenhagen and Aarhus from being approximately today, I believe, 320 kilometers to just 180 kilometers in almost a straight line. That idea catches everybody who thinks about it. And that's what happened in Denmark. You had 16 mayors of the region of Aarhus coming out demanding that this becomes reality. And everybody has a sense that with this higher level of integration, physical economic integration, you could make another economic shift equivalent to what we did with the Great Belt Bridge. Because our argument in the first campaign paper that Michel mentioned was that just to build another bridge would not do anything. To have two Great Belt Bridges next to each other wouldn't change a thing. So how would you make a new phase change? How would you make the physical economy of the country tighter and more dense? How do you increase the potential relative population density of the country yet again? Only by connecting the two largest cities directly, but not just by road, but you have to take the fastest train on the planet. That's the way you do it. So that idea caught on.
And you could just add that the LaRouche movement in Denmark has been campaigning for all these projects since 1979, 1980.
Oh, actually we did, yes. At that time, when we put out the first campaign magazine in 1980, the idea of a Kattegat bridge was so outrageous that we could hardly discuss it with anybody.
And now through the combination of these mass newspapers and through seeing opportunities where we can get these ideas out, we're actually on the verge of having this be reality.
Well, let's just jump in a minute to Elias, because it's the same sense, Elias, that you've been involved in people organizing for a shift in outlook in Germany and towards this international conference that you're hosting in Germany.
Yeah, I mean, these plans that finally were taken between the Danish and German traffic ministries suddenly changed the mood of the population a lot in two ways. On one hand, they got more optimistic and they see that, yeah, things are happening in the world, everything is not just stagnating, the famous German pessimism. But then you also have massive counter-organizing against this bridge and against what it represents, actually. I mean, the main arguments are the usual ones that the birds at the coastlines cannot mate where they want to, and people, it's nice on the boat, and then you won't be on the ferry anymore. It's so nice to go on the ferry, now that will be destroyed. The ferry companies will go bankrupt because of this bridge and blah, blah, blah. Such arguments, you know. But then that's actually minority. You know, this has started a new discussion in Germany on how to get further, and started new areas of discussion that were forbidden areas before. I have to for sure say that. And now with the pamphlet on the Bering Strait tunnel connection that the Russians want to build, a pamphlet on that we distributed in, I think, around 100,000 until now in Berlin and other parts of Germany, that has also forced a debate on this, which was an issue that has been tried to, yeah, if you don't speak about it, it doesn't exist, and try to silence it to death, sort of. It's pretty interesting. The traffic minister of Germany, Tiefensee, he was actually the mayor of the city of Leipzig at the time when we had the most massive, the most intense organizing there during the mayoral election, for example, that he won and and we lost. And then he goes into the government and becomes a traffic minister. And now the very same things that we are campaigning for, he's getting from Danes on a governmental level.
And you know, he was not too happy about it, Elias.
He wasn't?
No, he was, according to the Danish press, he had to get during the final negotiations with the Danish traffic minister, Flemming Hansen, things would have ended up very badly had he not gotten a direct call from Chancellor Merkel. Order him to sign the...
To agree. Yeah. This was all in June. We're talking... I mean, people should know. People can also get their maps out and re-listen to this program and see the geostrategic map here. And the, but it's all unfolding right now in these current weeks.
And it is actually very important because with... That is what, can you imagine, what I describe for a small country for Denmark. If you then look at the Eurasian land bridge as described by the Schiller Institute throughout the last decade, as multiple great belt bridges, because that's what it is. You extend the fiscal economic effect of the great belt bridge across an entire continent. What that would do in terms of freeing energy, creative energy of the minds of the people who live in these areas. Because this thing that Elias just told about from Germany, that people speaking about, oh, the birds can mate, and we like the coffee on the ferry. We had exactly the same thing, but it is dead in the country of Denmark. It is there no more. And if you go to the beginning and ending point of the bridge, the beginning point in Denmark, they are so happy that it's coming. The ending point, they think they're going to die when it ends there. But we had exactly the same thing in Denmark. Each side of the Great Belt in Nyborg and in Korsør, the mayors were leading the campaigns against the bridge. Now, of course, on the occasion of the 10-year anniversary, they went back to the same mayors. And they had no bones in admitting that they were flat wrong. So, the same. Look at this on a continental basis. Then add the Bering Strait tunnel connecting two continents. What will you do to the world? It will be. I try to explain it in our Danish newspaper or a monthly newsletter, Prometheus. Dream. Imagine that you go on board on the train in Copenhagen. You take it to Berlin. From there you go to Warsaw. From there you go to Moscow. Then you continue east.
Yakutsk.
Yeah. All the way up.
No.
Yeah.
Fairbanks.
And then you continue.
Yeah. Dawson Creek.
Yeah. Yeah. You go up. You cross the Bering Strait. Then you
Bismarck,
go down.
Bismarck, North Dakota.
Yeah. You go down. And you end up in a southern tip of South America, and you have traveled 16,000 kilometers.
Let me add that this is not simply a current dream, but that Leibniz, the great genius Leibniz, back in the 1600s, actually petitioned Peter the Great of Russia to make a Russian Academy of Sciences, and also to send an expedition to discover what is the eastern side of Russia, what is the situation with the body of water there, and what is the geography in terms of Russia on one side and the United States, America on the other side. And this expedition was actually then put into effect by the Danish sea captain in Russian service, Vitus Bering, who discovered what now is called the Bering Straits.
So we're getting on with history. Let's jump into Lewis for just a minute, because all of this is only possible if we do our priority work that get Cheney out.
Yeah, yeah. Not only that, but everybody should reflect on what Paul is saying. This is the implications of getting Dick Cheney out. Once Dick Cheney goes, what do we have the possibility of accomplishing and doing? Especially with the United States and the infrastructure in the United States as well, but also the Eurasian land bridge conception of Lenin LaRouche. And that is where we got to concentrate all of our organizing at this point, and everybody who organizes here on the call. And we got a lot of tools that we're putting together for people. But Michelle just recently, in the last briefing that we did, said that, Lenin LaRouche has said that for, just a handful of people, if you have a handful of people with great ideas, then you have the ability to change the world. And this case is definitely a very interesting proof of that kind of principle. But right now, the LaRouche youth movement in the United States is recruiting like mad, which is fun. It's a fun thought. And essentially, the flank that we have is Hillary Clinton, right? And as Lynn talks about how ambitious, I think in one point he said that Hillary's political proclivities are far worse than Bill Clinton's sexual proclivities. Right? That she is one of these real kind of ambitious political creatures. But if we can get her to come out for impeachment, not only is she going to, conform with the will of 76% of the Democrats in the country, and create a real kind of a floodgate. But this could be the key flank that Lynn's hitting on that could finally get the floodgates to just fly forward, in which the way that the thing with Nixon escalated back in the early 70s, that you will see a mirror of that. And so our organizing is concentrating on that. For everybody out there listening and who's organizing, just a couple quick things about our website. Right now, every slug that we're putting up on our new website has a PDF file, so you guys can print leaflets out and begin organizing immediately.
And let's make sure people have a www.larouchepac.com, LaRouchePac.com.
Especially, most important, this leaflet about Hillary Clinton, by far. The other thing that we're doing in collaboration with a new form of collaboration with the War Room and the editorial staff putting the website together is that all of the breakthroughs in terms of our organizing we're now getting on the website as leading developments. So we're going to continue to do that. As far as some of the leading developments that are occurring right now, as we speak, there's a Young Democrats of America convention that is going on in Dallas, Texas, and we have a lot of people down there. About 9 people. And, when we got there the first day, we said, listen, if Hillary calls for the impeachment of Cheney, she's going to win the presidency because so many people are going to, give her much acclaim, right?
By the way, and there's about 500 there, right?
Mm-hmm. About that many. And people are like, yeah, that would be nice, but that'll never happen, right? So it took an act of leadership to get a resolution written in conjunction with a lot of the Young Democrats who just simply want the impeachment of Dick Cheney. That's because that's exactly what young people in this country want, primarily, so that we can get this country moving. And this resolution had been circulated as a petition, and I'll just read it to you. It's very short. It says, we here, members of the Young Democrats of America – oh, and it's sanctioned by the Young Democrats because it was written with the LaRouche Youth Movement and the Young Democrats. We here, members of the Young Democrats of America and guests of this 2007 National Convention, find it necessary and see it fit that if you seek our support in the 2008 Democratic primaries, it will be required, your duty and your responsibility to demonstrate your sincere dedication in upholding the provisions and founding principles of the U.S. Constitution and the general welfare of the American people by publicly calling for either the resignation or impeachment of Vice President Dick Cheney. Right? And in other words, this resolution is strong enough to say that, hey, presidential candidates, if you don't call for the impeachment of Cheney, then the entire Young Democrats organization will not endorse you. Right? Now, this is exactly what some older hand Democrats objected to this kind of language and this kind of formulation. And the resolution was shot down at a resolutions committee by a bunch of 40-plus-year-olds who probably still live with their mothers. But and what we're doing now is we're waging a fight and trying to see if we can get it reintroduced in certain things and really, really fighting for this resolution and the particular wording of the resolution. This is really exciting. One other thing of note, you know, is the fact that the Congress is going to be recessing. And what we want to do nationally, and everybody in the different regions of the country can help us with this, is give every single congressman and senator what we're calling the Jim McDermott treatment. Jim McDermott is the the Seattle congressman who, when we intervened on him in a town hall meeting, said, "What do you want me to do? I'm not God," concerning the impeachment of Cheney. Right. And he got really mad because he didn't, you know, he was going with the Pelosi party line. After these kinds of interventions in his district, and when he got a real handle of what the population was thinking, he came back to the Congress, gave a very sharp speech, and signed on to Kucinich's House Resolution 333 for the impeachment of Dick Cheney. So that's what we mean by the McDermott treatment, where all the Democratic and also Republicans, because we also want to target the Republicans and make them so freaked out about losing their party that they just might do something. And all over the country, going to town hall meetings that they're at, following them everywhere, getting this call for Hillary to impeach, you know, call for the impeachment out to everybody that we see. And this will be the major crux of our operation coming into the next several weeks ahead. So,
and may I add, and also getting everyone to get their friends and relatives to watch LaRouche's webcast on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Right. That was right on, let's say right now, it's 1 o'clock Eastern time. It's July 25. It's this coming Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And let me stress again the website, because some people listen in during the week who aren't, you know, who need to follow it. It's LaRouchePac.com, www.LaRouchePac.com. And that's 1 o'clock. I'm also going to follow up, Michelle, just to let people know. And then on July 28th, a week from today, we're going to recommend people watch that again. We'll have a link to it, to the webcast, anyone listening now to this show, because our audio-visual people and broadcasting technicians will be involved in some other events that day. Namely, there are a number of special cadre schools going on around the world. Lewis might tell you there's one in New England right now.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And Mr. LaRouche will be speaking with simultaneous Spanish translation to an entire South American-wide July 28th event that's based out of Argentina. Uh-huh. And so this is really rolling along, this kind of process that's been described about Denmark leading the world, but is also we have the principle involved in that is we're seeing elsewhere. And the month of August, then, we're getting into what would be August 4th, I believe, the next live show. We're going to give an update, I hope, Lewis, with someone from the War Room on Operation Boondocks. I just made that up. But by then, August 5th, Congress might be in the United States around in their various districts. And this is the Guns of August kind of month, where dangerous things have happened at many points in the past. So in other parts of the world, we are going to be putting out fair warning, focusing on getting Cheney out. People can say more about it. Okay, so those are the things we have to make sure and get in, another one or two. But if you want to proceed.
Well, actually, I have a question for Paul, because about 3 years ago, I organized in Copenhagen to try to help the recruitment of young people. And, what's funny is that we have so many different members from Copenhagen and in Denmark that are in Germany right now, young people. And it seems that, you know, the recruitment of young people is a really, really good potential for that in a city like Copenhagen. And I know that has continued because oftentimes German youth would go up to Copenhagen and come back with two more Danes, you know, on occasion, right? And thinking about the cultural transformation that you were talking about that occurred in 1989 when they started to build this bridge to Malmo, I wanted to know if you can get even more in depth as to why those kinds of things would happen in a country in Denmark concerning its history, if there is a real Republican current within the history of Denmark that you can talk of.
Since it's still a monarchy, you cannot exactly say the Republican movement is that strong. Although, if you look at it on paper, there is a majority of parties in the parliament that are actually Republican in basis, but that is not an issue at this moment. But what has occurred? Let me describe it this way here. Had we been speaking about Denmark 20 years back, this would not be the issue. Then your experience in the city would have been completely different. You would have been in a city which was falling apart, with a lot of drug addicts in the street. The streets being controlled by goons from the drug haven Christiania. Mm-hmm. And filled with pessimism. So the Copenhagen you see today is the result of a change in the official demographic economic structure of the country. It is the combined effect of the political decision to do something which is correct and the fiscal process of doing so. So therefore, you now see what you saw 3 years ago when you were there. People are happy. You can speak to them. They're not pessimistic. You can even tell jokes. They will laugh at them, if you know. And this prospect for young people to go to Berlin and organize is not a wild thing. Danes go around in the world. So they've always done that. They like to travel, so therefore, yes, they would like to come to Berlin if that's what they're asked to do. And that is, you know, I've been with the LaRouche movement for more than 30 years. So that means I've seen the change. What we can do today was not conceivable 20 years ago. And it is this punctum salience, it is the shockwave change that can occur, which I started out describing. People have so difficulty in imagining before it happens, because they are empiricists. Uh-huh. After, they say, "Oh, of course, of course."
I knew it all the time.
Yeah, see it, you know.
let me add, though, that the decision to build the Great Belt Bridge did not come in a political vacuum. The LaRouche Association in Copenhagen was out there campaigning. Remember, LaRouche was in jail in 1989 still, mm-hmm. when the Berlin Wall fell. From jail, he came out with the idea of building what he called the productive triangle, a triangle between Berlin, Paris, and Vienna, with spiral arms into the rest of Europe. We were out with pamphlets. We were out on the street corner. We were taking the fight with the environmentalists and saying, we have to go with this. And we got our material into the traffic ministry at that time, got a thank you letter back. They were well informed about LaRouche's proposals. And we helped create the political conditions at that time for the decision to be made in the parliament to go ahead with this long-term dream. And this is what we're creating now. And I can add that in response to a question from Farida Gillisberg at a youth cadre school to Lyndon LaRouche in April, just after the traffic minister had rejected our proposal, LaRouche gave an answer saying, well, look, the Danes have this sense of Denmark. It used to be a seafaring country, but now what we need to do is create the idea of Denmark as having an identity as the connection to China across the intervening territory of Europe. And I think you will probably find a lot of Danes who would just love to sit back and be, ah, that's what we are. That's what we are.
It's actually true. It's not difficult for Danes to imagine that. And let me also add that the Barents Strait Conference, which was addressed by LaRouche in June or in May.
The one in April that he sent a paper to and
yes.
other people spoke from around the world, correct?
That received regular press coverage also in Copenhagen.
Oh, there. Mm-hmm. Elias?
Yep.
Do you want to throw in more about here, either about the question of the cultural shift or your experience in Scandinavia?
I had a question for Elias.
Okay.
In terms of, I heard rumors that Sweden might again revive the nuclear programs of earlier times.
The Prime Minister has unofficially declared the old parliamentary decision to shut down all the nuclear power plants by 2010 as invalid, even officially abolished. And that's, of course, good for Sweden. But the problem is the rest of the world. Our present Prime Minister doesn't seem so concerned with using the Swedish nuclear technology to proliferate it to the rest of the world. But you had some minor incidents on German power plants recently, and that's been a huge thing in Germany. It's being picked up by the local politicians in districts where it took place. It was one in Krummel, I think it's called, not far from Denmark, and also in some other place, and this is being played up as a big thing. That's why we had to get out of nuclear. So this is a massive counter-organizing against the nuclear renaissance that is taking place in Finland, in Argentina, in Russia, in many places of the world where you're building nuclear power plants and look positively as the development of new nuclear technologies and third, fourth, fifth generation of atomic energy. And so.
Well, Elias, you'll be glad to know, and everyone here, that just today, the head of the Swedish energy firm, that would be Vattenfall, came out criticizing all this hysteria against nuclear power in Germany.
Yeah, he's become a sort of an advisor to the German government, unofficially. I don't know what his real intentions, but he's not the most. He was the guy that basically drove through the deregulation of the energy markets that has been leading to huge rises in electricity prices and so on. So,
yeah, you get the double-edged situation. I'll just tell you, yesterday, France, the Electricity de France signed a big deal here with Constellation Energy in the United States to build a couple electricity plants. But just a couple, and within the control of the international syndicate's financiers. It is not a full-scale nuclear program. Always good to have a couple plants. But yes, but it's a great period of double dynamics, maybe.
Yeah. And the issue is this proliferation and the right of all the countries in the world to atomic energy, and the right of all human beings to the fruits of the development. It's an old, this technological apartheid issue that is still going on in a new form in the 21st century. I have a question for Michelle also, or maybe Paul has something to say on it, that in Denmark it seems much less reluctant than in other countries to having the state financing infrastructure projects and so on. What about the issue of capital budgeting and the things that Lino LaRouche was talking about a lot during the congressional elections in November last year? Have you seen any openness, or what's the attitude in the Danish political debate and in the among the politicians in general towards it?
When we had our testimony in the Danish Parliament at the Traffic Committee in the middle of April, we brought in the concept of LaRouche's idea of capital budget.
Yeah.
That was in our testimony, and LaRouche's article about the message to Congress, the capital budget, that was introduced as an official document of the Transportation Committee. There are two aspects. One is that right now Denmark actually has a surplus because of the oil income, so it actually has the money to do it otherwise. And the second thing is that there's still a kind of budget-cutting idea of if they go for financing through the state budget, then they would have to take it from somewhere else, and that's why they came out with the idea of creating a state company.
Now, it's hard to believe this hour is concluded. I'm glad we got into just how we're going to finance all these things, because we are going to do them, of course.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask Michelle, after I remind people to close, and I want her to give a website of something beautiful in Denmark. Nothing rotten. It's all beautiful now. Her special music research website in just a second. But again, listen to the LaRouche Show. The next live show is August 4th from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on LaRouchePub.com. And on July 28th, the show will just recommend you listen to the link to the July 25th LaRouche webcast, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on LaRouchePack.com. Michelle, tell us in your final seconds.
For those who would like to read about our the maglev work, it's magnettogue, magnettogue.dk. And those who want to look up about the Bach's wonderful work in the musical offering, it's on the Danish homepage, Schiller Institute, SCHILLERINSTITUT.DK, and look for music and culture.
Thank you all very much, Michelle, Paul, Louis, Elias, and we are going to look forward to Cheney out in August. Mm-hmm. Please continue, and thank you for building these bridges. This is the end of the LaRouche Show. It's July 21st.